This is a podfic of the work The Poison Tree by Stilton Basket, read by Daisy Diversions. The rating on this work is mature, and the creator chooses not to use archive warnings, except with the addition of rape slash non-con. The categories are gen. The fandom is The Untamed and Murazusha. Characters: Sisse, Pan Golin, Shui Young, and Meng Yao. Additional tags for alternate universe canon divergence: partial fix it, someone lives, not everyone dies, murder, non-con warning for Jin Guanshan's canonical death, and angst with a happy ending. Summary. By unspoken agreement, Sisse is the one who does the killing. Author's notes. Brief note for readers unfamiliar with my other fics. Pan Golin is an OC for my 12 Moons and a Fortnight fic. She's a physician known for performing medical miracles and is approximately 3 generations older than Wen Qing. Lufeng is the village next to Lotus Pier. Title from A Poison Tree by William Blake. Reader's notes, I'm recording this as part of Voice Team Mystery Box 2024. It was suggested to do this fic, and when I saw it was by Stilton Basket, I said, I'm in with out even reading it first. So I'm really excited to be able to be part of this project. We'll be doing what's called simulpodding this fic, so you'll be seeing multiple versions from different podfic creators. So I hope you really enjoy these different interpretations. You may mend the damage to the flesh under my skin, but leave the scars as they are. The soft hands stitching the wounds on her face do not tremble. They pause for a fraction of a second and then continue smoothly on, drawing the fine double thread through her skin. You will not be able to work with a scarred face. Not at the Red Rose of Yunpin, at least, the physician says quietly. Are you certain? Sisse looks up over the physician's shoulder and into the battered reflection in the mirror at her back. Yes, Pan Daifu, she replies after a long silence. If my face is healed, another patron might come to take me as a concubine. And then, where would I be then? Pan Golin does not speak again. She stitches the last wound on Sisse's cheek and anoints each cut with an astringent paste that chills her flesh down to the bones. And then she leads her to the second floor of the clinic and points her to a narrow bed with fresh white sheets. You should rest until supper, she says. When you wake, the wounds will have scabbed over, and by tomorrow, you'll be well enough to return home if you would like to go. Home. Sisse's lavishly decorated bedroom in the Hong Mei Gua is the only home she has ever known. She was sold there when she was 14, during the last year of famine in the north, and with her scarred face, she will be unable to keep her quarters for longer than a month. Even so, she is tired. Perhaps. There is always work for a prostitute, no matter what she looks like, but with a face like this, she will not be in such high demand as she was until this very morning. She will be no threat to her clients' wives this way either. Or at least she hopes not, though she doubts that any woman with means enough to do her harm would be threatened by a scarred courtesan on the upper side of 40. She goes to sleep as bidden and eats a quiet dinner in the clinic's little refractory with Pao Golin after she wakes. After the meal, she sleeps again, and in the morning, Pan Daifu sees her off at the door with a bottle of fragrant oil for her face and a packet filled with a dull gray powder that smells like old wood ash. "What's this?" Sissa asks, as Pan Daifu tucks the little packet into her bag. "Is it medicine for the cuts, or?"
"If you mean to go on working with those scars, you will have to do it without the Hong Meigui's protection," Pan Golin whispers, leaning close to Sissa's ear. "Two shi of this, burned with incense, will render any man who breathes the smoke unconscious for half a shisen. Use it as liberally as you must if you believe you are in danger. And if you run out, the Lufang apothecary sells it under the name of Huan Mian Yi."
"Any man, but not a woman?" Sissa asks haltingly. "And what about cultivators?"
"It will work on any man who is intact, but it does not affect children or women."
Sissa's fist closes over the little packet, and for a moment, she finds herself unable to speak. There was precious little the wardens at the Red Rose could do to aid a woman in need, though it was a safer brothel than most. And if the 16-year-old Sissa had possessed such a powerful safeguard, then perhaps... She closed her eyes. "Thank you," she says after a long while. "And there will be trouble where I'm going. So I suppose you and I will meet again someday."
The trouble does come, though both later and sooner than Sissa expected. It comes in a shape that even her worst nightmares could never conjure. A carriage full of her sisters, some old and some disfigured, and some merely so plain that no pleasure house of means would take them, and three cultivators swathed in golden robes. Her patron for the night is the eldest of the three, shrunken with sickness and bound to a white bed draped in light silks. And when Sissa cries out in protest, one of the younger men emerges from the shadows and puts a dagger to her throat.
"Go on," says the third man, speaking from behind a heavy curtain. "Do as Yang'er tells you, Gunen, and do not stop, even if he dies." In that moment, Sissa wonders, in the part of her mind that seems to split from the rest of her, whenever a man draws a knife upon her or orders her to give him more than she's willing to give, how a client's demands could have truly made her suffer after 30 years in the skin trade. Some piece of her is in agony as she goes to the bed, though equally determined not to let any of her sisters be the first to endure a horror like this. And when she stumbles away from her victim, too shaken to draw breath, she stumbles against the wall and tries not to scream.
What have I done? She thinks wildly. In all these years, there was nothing she had not done. Nothing that had not been done to her. And now, the room is wavering about her, but Sissa cannot faint. She is suddenly certain that she will not leave this place alive, and that the knife in the young cultivator's hand, which he unsheathes at every whimper of terror from the woman who took Sissa's place on the bed, much to the amusement of the figure behind the curtains at the far end of the chamber, will taste blood by the night's end. She reaches into her sleeve, hoping against hope that she might find something that might be used as a weapon. Sewing scissors, perhaps, or the ornamental knife that one of her jiges at the Red Rose gifted to her when her lover bought out her contract and took her away with him. But instead, her grasping fingers alight on a bit of folded paper. Sissa knows what it is before she draws it out. The thing that tumbles into her palm is the incense packet Pan Golin gave her at the clinic in Yunpin. The incense that Pan Dai Fu vowed could sedate any man, even if he were a cultivator. And as Sissa struggles upright, she realizes that there is an incense burner not 5 feet away from her. When she moves so slowly that not even her sisters seem to notice. The two young men are still gazing at the bed in the center of the room, one watching the tortured face of Sissa's Maymay, Chu Xia, with unbridled glee, while the other mocks their unwilling client for being made to endure the touch of a woman with a missing left hand. When she tips the bit of paper into the metal basin, she shuts her eyes in terror for a moment before forcing them open again. There is no change in the air as the incense begins to burn. The Hong Mian Yi is smokeless, and more importantly, scentless. And as Chu Xia climbs out of the bed and makes her way back towards the others on trembling feet, Sissa hears a gasp and a loud echoing thump from behind the curtain. The boy with the knife goes still. He takes one step forward and then another, and then he, too, crumples onto the ground, collapsing so swiftly that it looks as if all the tendons in his body had been cut. She hears nothing from the man on the bed.
Kalian,
she says roughly, speaking to the girl who had been meant to service him after Chu Xia.
Don't move. Let me... I think he's dead.
Kalian chokes and backs away, gasping. Beside her, Chu Xia bursts into cheers. And when Sissa puts her hands on the man's throat, she realizes that his pulse has stopped.
What happened? One of the older women rasps. All of a sudden, how are the others dead too?
It was me, her Ai. I put sleeping medicine in the incense burner, Sissa whispers. It'll only last for an hour, and we should be gone by then.
Chu
Tusha and Kalyan exchanged horrified glances. And almost at once, Shisha understands that there is but one way forward.
If they wake and find us gone,
Aunt Her says slowly,
they will search for us to the very ends of the earth.
They must have wanted to kill that wretch, and now we must not let them search. Sissa hears herself reply, then no one will come looking, and no one will know.
By unspoken agreement, Sissa is the one who does the killing. It proves to be both bloodless and swift. Her hands are as large as a man's, and nearly as strong. And though they tremble as if stricken with fever when she puts them to the first white throat, it is the work of less than half a key for Sissa to break one neck and then the other. The two young men die painlessly without ever regaining consciousness. And afterwards, Sissa stands over the bodies and stares at them in numb disbelief.
What should we do with them?
Kalyan asks, quivering.
We can't drag them to the river from here. Someone will see.
That is true enough, Sissa thinks.
You should leave,
she says aloud.
What?
Go, Sissa says. I'm the one who killed them. Take the carriage and go home. I'll deal with the bodies. She does not watch the others leave. One moment her sisters are there, and the next, they are gone. And Sissa is left alone, with only the three corpses in the bedchamber for company.
You didn't tell anyone where you were going tonight, she observes, addressing the figure with the odd black hat on its head. How could you have? You meant to do murder. So why breathe a word when the truth might arise to make trouble for you later? I'll take my time, Sissa murmurs, half dreaming as she moves towards the door. You won't go anywhere anyway. Presently, she finds herself on the doorstep, clutching a bright piece of gold between her palms. She and her sisters had been handsomely paid before they were brought here, and that payment proves to be priceless now, when she makes her way to the nearest inn and asks someone to call her a carriage.
Where to, Feren?
The driver asks her. He is kinder than she expected. For a man who has been shaken from his bed without warning in the dead of night. And with a jolt, Sissa remembers that she put on a veiled hat borrowed from her Ayi before she knocked on the inn's front door. The way Mao's veil is thicker than most. And in the dark, even a cultivator would have found it difficult to make out the scars on Sissa's face. To Lufang, she tells him. You may leave me at the apothecary's on the east side of town, near Lotus Pier. The journey must have taken at least an hour, though Sissa hardly notices the time passing until they cross into Lufang. Half an hour after that, the carriage stops at the mouth of a broad street close to the water. and at the street's end, Sissa can see a tall building with pale green lanterns dangling from the eaves on the upper story.
"That's the apothecary,"
the driver says.
"Shall I help you down, my lady?"
"No, but thank you," Sissa replies. "Good night, Gongza." And with that, she climbs the step to the apothecary and raps softly at the door. "Forgive the disturbance, Xiao Mei Mei," she says quietly, when a young apprentice in white robes comes running to answer it. "I must speak with Healer Pan." When Pan Guolin hears what transpired that night, she slips a Chunkun pouch into her sleeve and leaves Sitsa from the apothecary's back courtyard.
"There's no time to lose," she tells her. "We must go by sword. Hold on to me and do not look down. You might vomit if you do."
"I won't," Sissa replies. "Forgive me, Daifu, but if I were going to vomit tonight, I probably would have done it earlier." They reach the deserted manor house in less than a quarter Shichen. Pan Guolin goes into the bedchamber alone, while Sissa waits outside. And when Pan Daifu comes to join her, Sissa looks through the open door and realizes that all three of the bodies have disappeared. She throws a questioning look at Pan Guolin, and in answer, the physician reaches down and touches the Chunkun pouch bag at her waist.
"Oh," Sissa says numbly, "I see."
In that instant, her knees give out, and the world goes black around her. At some point, Pan Guolin must have carried her back to the clinic in Lufeng, for Sissa heard the little apprentice asking if she would like a supper tray, to which she replied,
"No, I want a bath. Please, let me have a bath."
"Hush, hush,"
for Sissa had begun to cry so loudly that the other medics who slept on the ground floor came to see what was the matter.
"You'll have your bath, I promise. Don't cry, dear one, don't cry."
So someone with gentle hands tends her through the bath and takes her up to bed afterwards. Sissa can't tell whether Pan Guolin is among the women at her side, but either way, her kindly attendants hold her hands and praise her as her dead mother used to when she was a girl, vowing that no one would ever connect her to what took place that night. "No one will know what happened to them," comes the soothing voice of a child. "Shifu took them down to the dissection chamber, and she won't leave even the bones intact."
"Yes, yes," another woman whispered, "who saved three lives tonight, Madam Sissa. Shifu has three patients whose kidneys have failed them. Three children whose bodies are too weak to endure for much longer, and you brought two young cultivators to Shifu's doorstep just in time."
"We shall use the eyes too," a young girl in her teens says, smiling. "There is a blind tailor in Liu Fang's upper quarter with a young son to care for. He was blinded by an infection many years ago, but now..."
"And the kitchen girl, whose face was burned," the little apprentice murmurs, stroking Sissa's hand.
The corpse in black has beautiful skin, doesn't he? If we use it to treat Madame Yao, she'll be even prettier than she was before. And amid the sweet words of the healers, Sissa closes her eyes and falls asleep. She remembers nothing more of what they say to her that night. Within the month, the whole of Lufang, which has long since grown used to the healing of miracles performed in Pan Golin's clinic, is alit with happiness. For the two children with diseased kidneys have been dearly loved by all who knew them from the very day of their birth. The once blind tailor in the south quarter is well enough to sew by candlelight by the winter's end. And the fisherwoman in the next town over, brought to Lufang Hospital after losing her right hand to a water ghoul, departs in possession of a slender, scholarly hand almost exactly the size of her old one. Sissa is an apprentice healer herself within 2 years of that dreadful night. Much later, she discovers that one of the men she killed had been the little Meng Yao, Meng She's son, who left the Hong Mei Gua after his mother's death to seek his fortune with a cultivation sect. "He made his fortune then," she says, when Pan Golin tells her.
I suppose. By becoming a killer in his father's employ, from what I hear.
And then, Sissa, do you regret?
No,
Sissa answers, and it is the truth.
If I had to, Shifu, I would do it again.
Author's notes: slightly macabre Okabe. Sissa,
please help. I killed two people in self-defense and I have no idea how to hide the bodies.
Pan Golin, stretched out of her mind because she has two pediatric patients on the verge of death and organ donors are in incredibly short supply. Say less. Nia Huaisong immediately after naming Joy's death,
I'm going to take revenge on Jingguan Yao and kill him so hard.
11 months later, Nia Huaisong,
it would be great if I could actually find him first. Angry face emoji.
Afterward, for any readers concerned about Wei Wuxian, he eventually comes back as a ghost because of the Yin Tiger amulet, which was left under suppression seals at Jinling Tai before Jingguan Yao and Shuai Yang left to have Jingguan Shan killed. The seals broke about a year after Jingguan Yao and Shuai Yang died, and the amulet acted as an anchor for Wei Wuxian's soul and allowed him to cultivate a physical form again. He eventually broke Wen Ning out of prison, took him back to the burial mounds, and discovered that Long Wangji rescued A Yuan, after which he went to the cloud recesses to find him. And that's a wrap. Come say hi on my Tumblr at Stilton Basket, or comment to let me know what you thought of this darker than usual, but very cathartic thick. Addition, it's recruiting season for the MXTX food zine. Artists and writers from all three MXTX fandoms are welcome to sign up until January 10th, 2025. But if you see this after the deadline and would like to join, message the event Tumblr at MXTX Food Zine and we'll figure something out.
Reader's notes. Thank you again to Stilton Basket for having blanket permission to podfic.
If you made it this far, considering going back and leaving kudos and comments for the original author on AO3. Thanks for listening.